Everybody says you need to keep open lines of communication. Well, and pretty much every parent thinks they have open lines of communication.
Right.
So what does that really mean, and how do we really do it?
I think it really means that both parent and child feel that they can go to each other and say whatever they want, but it needs to be, like, if the parent is going to the child to ask them, like, what are you doing? Is there peer pressure? What's going on at these parties that you go to? What are you doing this weekend? Stuff like that. It needs to be in a non-judgmental way. And it needs to stay in a non-judgmental way, so the child will keep returning to the parent for advice.
Okay.
And just guidance on things like that. Because that's what I think you need your parents most for guidance, because they've gone through it.
So non-judgment is the most critical part of this communication.
Definitely.
Because if a child thinks they're going to come to their parent, they're going to unload all this stuff, and then it's going to be used against them, open your mouth?
Exactly.
Or then this is what causes kids to lie?
Yes, definitely.
Because here's the other thing. Do you lie so that you won't get caught and get punished, or do you lie because you don't want to disappoint your parents? Not you personally, but I'm asking you to kind of speak.
Well,
in global terms,
for most kids, they say, well, I don't want to get caught. But at the same time, if your parent says I'm disappointed in you, then that's just
the worst.
That's the worst. Definitely.
So people don't want to let their parents down.
Right.
OK. How many times has this happened to you where you have told a lie and secretly you wished your parents knew and would call you out on it?
All the time. I always want to open up.
Really?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And just sometimes I'd be like, just ask one question and I could just
go from there.
Right. Just it's little steps can really make a really big difference with your kid. They notice it.
And then let's say you're going to open up and have a conversation. What's a good time to do that?
I think maybe when you're doing like a type of activity that both of you have agreed to do, and just something very non-formal and just very open and just like very nonchalant questions, just not...
Like a mother and daughter maybe cooking or
right.
Driving in the car. I found driving in the car is great because you don't have to look at each other.
Right, yeah,
You don't have a phone call or people that can interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think a lot of times boys and men, end up like playing sports together or, you know,
right,
that kind of... So don't go, I want to get close to you.
Right,
please
yeah.
open up, talk to me, and sit across the table with your hands folded.
Right, yeah. Some kids, when they're basically like spilling their lives to their parents, they don't really want to look them in the eye because they don't want to see their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So I think something where the kid could feel like they could maybe turn away from their parents or something like that. It's not very face-to-face. I want to know everything. I think it'd make the child more comfortable and the parent more comfortable. If they feel uncomfortable, they could just do something with the activity that they're doing.
Do you think it makes a difference in having I know you happen to have an extracurricular focus
mm-hmm.
that you're passionate about. Does this seem to make a difference as to the kind of stoner, drinker, partier kids versus the not so much?
Yes. When you have something that you're dedicated to and you can't come like on a Saturday practice with a hangover to, it really affects what you party. And plus, with the kids that are doing the same activity, know the same thing. So you start hanging out with those kids. So alcohol and drugs don't become a very prevalent thing.
So it is important to have something else. Now, how many kids do you know that you would say, like, oh, my God, they're real partiers? Like, a fair amount?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
And out of those, what is a common denominator? Like, do their parents work a lot so they're not at home? You know, do their parents neglect them? Do they not have good relationships? Do they have low self-esteem? Do they not do well in school?
I think it's all the above. Because they feel if they party and they talk about how, oh, I got so wasted last weekend, people are like, oh, wow, they're cool. But after a while, it just gets old, and plus, I think it's a attention thing. If they get caught or if they have to go to the hospital to get their stomach pumped, obviously their parents are going to know. So their parents, they get in trouble, but their parents are going to pay more attention to them.
So sometimes it's a cry for help.
Yes, just attention.
Out of that, how many of those parents do you think drink or maybe drink too much?
Probably all.
What about, like, taking kids on a trip to the morgue to see people that have, like, overdosed on drugs? Or, I mean, is that too heavy or too macabre?
I think that'd be just crazy. That really actually scared the morgue. Wow. I think that would really scare some kids. It could work. I think it could be a possibility of definitely.
Well, Nina, I don't want to end on a depressing note about the morgue, so I would like to finish by saying you have been wonderful. You've been so candid, forthcoming about what your experience has been and about what you know goes on in the world of teens. So thank you.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be able to help other teens with the same problems that I had.
And a reminder that the opinions expressed by the teens on this show are their own and in no way indicate acceptance or promotion of underage drinking or drug use. As the host of Teens Talk Truth and as a parent, I am adamantly opposed to both. However, I very much appreciate the candor with which the teens have come forward to share this insight to help us as parents. If you'd like more information on Teens Talk Truth, go to www.teenstalktruth.com.